Moff Dizra laid down his data pad and looked up at Pierce and Flim.
Very satisfactory. It all seems to be going quite well.
Flim, on the other hand, was impatient for action.
We have, what, a few pirate raids and maybe 100 riots to our credit?
Patience is a virtue, Pierce reminded him.
Even for soldiers, especially for soldiers. I presume it's occurred to you, Flim said, that there's a very simple way the New Republic could resolve this whole crisis and cut the ground out from under us.
Of course it has,
Dizra replied with strained patience.
All they need to do is find out which specific Bothans were involved with Palpatine's agents on Kamas. The only intact set of records is here on Bastion, and I've already dealt with them.
Actually, that's not entirely accurate,
Tyrs said thoughtfully.
The records at the Ubiquitrate base on Yaga Minor may also contain a copy. And I'm the logical choice to go and check.
Tyrs broke off at a beep from Dizra's private comm.
It was the pirate, Zothip. He spoke without formalities.
All right, Dizra. What in blazes is going on? I want to know how Luke Skywalker just happened to drop in for a visit.
Dizra frowned. What are you talking about?
Don't twist me around, Dizra. Skywalker was at Kauran, asking about your precious clones. Got out of our Jedi trap, and we wound up having a blast and bust.
I mourn with you in your loss. What does this have to do with me?
What doesn't it have to do with you? First you pull out all your clones, and now Skywalker drops in for a visit. I think you decided you don't need us anymore, and pointed Skywalker in our direction to try to close us down.
Dizra shrugged, watching Tyrs out of the corner of his eye. The other seemed to be writing a message at furious speed.
Perhaps Skywalker identified you during that botched job at Iphigen. You said yourself that the ships that drove you away were a YT-1300 and an X-Wing. Solo and Skywalker?
The pirate conceded with ill grace.
It could be, I suppose. But he knew I'd been using your clones.
Dizra waved a hand in dismissal.
He was hunting Shoal Darter, Zothip, trying to make a connection, any connection, between you and the Empire. He doesn't know anything.
Tyrs had finished writing and stepped behind the desk, holding the datapad so Dizra could read it. Dizra leaned back in his seat and threw Tyrs a faint smile. Then he returned to Zothip.
Besides, I have another job to offer you. In approximately 3 weeks, Admiral Pelion and the Kamara will be leaving Imperial space for a secret meeting at Pezzatin. I want you to attack him there. Furthermore, I want the ships you send against the Kamara to be marked with Corellian insignia.
Zothip scratched his beard.
Do you now? Any particular reason?
Why don't you see if you can figure it out? For yourself.
Zothip's image disappeared. Tyrs took the datapad back and blanked it.
There's another military virtue for you, Flim. Never throw away allies until you're absolutely sure you won't need them anymore.
We have similar rules in the Fringe,
Flim said dryly.
Are you trying to make Pelion think the New Republic has rejected his peace offer and is ambushing him instead?
Dizra cocked an eyebrow.
Very good. You're learning. This way, it will look like Beliblis, a Corellian, is turning him down. Ships bearing New Republic insignia would be too heavy-handed. An obvious setup.
Tyrs sat forward.
Right. Also bear in mind that we don't want Pelion giving up entirely on this surrender idea, at least not yet. If Beliblis has rejected his advances without official sanction, then Pelion's next move would be to seek someone else to make his overtures to. That will take time, which plays into our hands. More importantly, it will also require him to leave Pezzatin prematurely. Even if enough of Major Vermal's message got through before he was captured at Morishim, chances are Pelion and Beliblis will miss each other.
Dizra spoke casually, carefully concealing his own surprise. That last part hadn't occurred to him.
It should work quite well. Are we ready for the Bothawee riot yet?
Tyrs allowed himself a smile.
We're very close. We'll use Navit's team, I think. They've been the most successful agitators.
Dizra nodded.
And we definitely want this one to be memorable.
Aboard the wild card, no one was more startled than the Togorian, Siski, when the Imperial Star Destroyer reared up in front of the bridge. She dug her claws into the metal control board, even as she fought her fear to obey Card's orders, which were, all things considered, surprisingly calm. When he got a transmission and tapped the comm key, Card had a smile on his face.
"Hello, Booster. How are things?"
Booster Terek's cheerful voice boomed from the bridge speaker.
"Never better, you old pirate. Welcome to the Errant Venture."
"Talon Card,"
Booster's voice boomed.
"Welcome aboard."
Booster was striding down the command walkway toward them, arms flung wide in expansive welcome. And walking right behind him was Booster's daughter Mirax, and his son-in-law, Commander Corin Horn, a member of Wedge Antilles' rogue squadron. As Corin greeted the newcomers, his tone was guarded. "Booster, I don't mind that Card knows we're here, but..."
"Relax, Corin."
Booster gripped Card's hand.
"Card's top people are just as trustworthy as he is."
Corin shot Card a decidedly ambivalent look. "That makes me feel so much better." Card offered his hand.
"Don't worry. We won't tell Coruscant. One of its most revered heroes is associating with Riffraff."
He shifted his gaze to the woman.
"Hello, Mirax. It's been a long time. Where's the little one?"
"Valens, right down there."
Mirax waved toward the starboard crew pit. "And he's 6 years old, not so little anymore."
"Like a Minok with his tail on fire,"
Booster said wryly.
"Seriously, Card, I'd appreciate it if you would keep Corin's presence here to yourself. All he needs is a little information..."
"Booster!"
Corin glared at his father-in-law.
"Seal your word, Port, will you?"
Card held up a hand.
"I understand. I'll just borrow Booster for a few minutes to discuss my errand."
He reached into his inside jacket pocket and pulled out a data card.
"But before I forget, Mirax, I brought this for your son."
Mirax frowned.
"What is it?"
"An Edian tonal card for his Chortaquilo. It's proper etiquette for a guest to bring a small gift for his host's children."
Corin leaned over her shoulder to look at the data card, a sandbagged look on his face.
"But how did you know?"
Card answered modestly.
"My information sources are quite good. Perhaps I could help you with something."
Corin looked at Booster, then at Mirax, and finally back at Card.
"What's it gonna cost me?"
Card shrugged.
"Whatever it's worth, of course. We can negotiate price later."
Corin growled.
"All right, fine. I presume you're aware we've had a lot of demonstrations and riots lately against Bothan businesses and consulates."
"Over the revelations contained in the Commas document," Card murmured.
"Right. Well, we're starting to hear the name Vengeance being batted about. I want to know if there's some homegrown organization or if they're getting help from outside."
Card nodded.
"We'll do a data search when we get back to the wild card. If there's nothing there, we'll start some quiet inquiries and see what we can find."
Booster rubbed his hands together.
"Sounds good. And as long as we're trading wish lists here, you also had some information you wanted, right, Card?"
Card nodded.
"Two questions. First of all, our friend Luke Skywalker is trying to locate the Kavrloo pirates. Any idea which rock they might have buried themselves under?"
Other than the asteroid at Kauran, Booster was unable to help with that one. He shrugged.
"Second question. Before he went to Kauran, Skywalker helped stop a pirate raid at Iphigen. During the battle, he sensed what he thought was a group of clones aboard one of the pirates' ships."
The atmosphere was suddenly rigid. Finally, Card spoke again.
"Our first job is to find out whether they're Imperial leftovers or whether someone has found another cache of cloning cylinders."
A voice called from one of the crew pits.
"Got a ship incoming. The Starry Ice. Pilot wants landing instructions."
Card thumbed his comlink on and spoke to Mara. If she was surprised to find him there, she didn't show it.
Their exchange of news was interrupted by Fawn's excited voice.
"Over there! Coming in from starboard!"
Booster was already running along the command walkway toward the forward viewport, Corin right behind him. Mara's voice came from the Errant Venture's main bridge speaker system.
"It's hard to see. Small and dark. Looks a little like a modified TIE fighter."
Booster searched the sky.
Get the deflector shields up, and stand by turbo lasers.
I'm getting a transmission now.
Card's communications officer barked.
It's, well, strange. I don't know what it is.
There it is. Corin jabbed out a finger. Coming straight at us. Booster shouted,
hit the ground!
And then, at the last second, the ship made a strange corkscrewing maneuver and shot around the viewport. Card looked out.
Where did it go?
Mara answered.
Cut around behind the drive nozzles where we couldn't see it, then jumped to light speed. Luke spooked one just like it the other day after I got him out of that pirate's nest.
Card asked. Mara, what about the transmission we got?
We're running it now. It seems to be a short message followed by a pause, followed by a repeat of the message. We're not coming up with a match to any known language or encrypt.
Card spoke thoughtfully.
I think it was transmitting specifically toward this ship, and the fact that it paused and then repeated itself implies it was expecting an answer.
He was silent for a moment.
They came in for a close look at an Imperial Star Destroyer.
Fawn said, her voice tight.
I've just run a phoneme analysis on that transmission. I think I found the name Thrawn in there. It was kind of broken up.
Mara's voice was grim.
That's because you were getting his full name there. Mithron Urodo. Thrawn was what he called his core name.
Corin's lip twitched.
I wasn't supposed to say anything about this to anyone but Booster, but under the circumstances, that Deveronian you got the Commerce document from, Card, he found some other data cards in the same batch. One of them was labeled the Hand of Thrawn.
Card nodded slowly, so that was the secret Leia had been holding out on him at Wayland, and the reason she'd been giving Mara such a strange look.
Booster rumbled, So you figure these ships are looking for either Thrawn or this Hand of Thrawn?
Mara said grimly.
Perhaps the person in the ship is the Hand of Thrawn. Whichever, it's starting to look more important than ever that we track these ships down. Vaughn and I can still pull their vector and check it out.
Card thumbed off the comlink.
Good luck, he said softly.
Card stepped over to Corin's side.
You were right here when that alien ship went past, he said quietly. Did you happen to sense anything unusual about it? I mean, whatever it is that Skywalker picks up when he gets near a group of clones?
Corin turned to face him. My talent is not exactly public knowledge, Card, he said, his tone somewhere between challenge and threat.
Yes, I know,
Card replied evenly.
Wise of you to keep it that way.
I think so, Corin countered. Problem is, you're in the business of selling information.
Ah, but I'm also in the business of survival,
Card said. Corin's forehead furrowed slightly. So that's how it works, huh? You keep quiet and I owe you one?
Yes, but be assured that when I collect, it'll be something safe. I owe Mirax that much,
he considered.
Either that or something vital that absolutely has to be done.
Corin snorted gently. That covers a lot of ground. Luke took a deep breath, closed his eyes, and stretched out to the Force. He had gone to a New Republic med station to spend some time in a Bacta tank, to recover from the wounds he'd sustained on the pirate's asteroid and then in his unprotected flight to Mara's ship. Unsure of the next step in his search for the resurfacing Imperial clones, Luke turned to deep Jedi meditation for guidance. Now his thoughts, his emotions, his entire being slipped into the proper pattern. And suddenly the whole universe exploded in front of him into a brilliant kaleidoscope of color and motion. Luke gasped, the vast image wavering momentarily like desert heat shimmer. It was like no vision he'd ever had before. 100 different scenes, 1,000 different possibilities, all of it swirled together with the fury and randomness of a Tatooine sandstorm. Lines of possibility wove around each other or crashed together, sometimes merging, sometimes bouncing apart again, always forever changed by the encounter. Familiar faces were there among unfamiliar ones, passing in front of him or flickering behind other events unfolding at the edges of his sight. He caught a glimpse of Wedge and Rogue Squadron as they swept past in the fury of battle, saw his Jedi students inexplicably fanning out across the New Republic, saw himself standing on a balcony against the wall of a darkened canyon, saw Han and Leia facing a huge mob, and then one final vision appeared. Mara, surrounded by craggy rock and floating in water, her eyes closed, her arms and legs limp, as if in death. And with a sudden gasp of air, he found himself back in his room, gazing out the window at the hills. Hills that no longer glowed golden, but were instead outlined by the subtler gloss of starlight. He rubbed his eyes. He would have sworn that vision had only lasted a few minutes. I don't know, R2. I saw a lot of things, but I didn't see anything that seemed to have anything to do with our search. Which might mean, he realized suddenly, that hunting for clones was no longer what he was supposed to be doing. Stepping over to the window, he looked up at the stars. You will know, Yoda had told him, when you are calm, at peace. Taking a deep breath, Luke set about calming his mind. Then he knew what he must do. R2, I saw a world with a wide, deep canyon that had buildings built into the sides. Check the main computer and see where that might be. Han frowned with concentration, then held up a hand to Leia. You hear that? Leia looked up from the retrieval station. I didn't hear anything. They were at Bothui, scrutinizing Bothan financial records. Han strained to hear. There it is again. Leia had that Jedi look on her face. It's a crowd, and they're getting louder. Han moved toward the door. Maybe it's one of those demonstrations. I'll go check it out. The corridor outside was alive with hurrying Bothans, some carrying boxes of data cards or other equipment, others just scrambling for safety. Han stood on the wide overlook balcony and looked down at the atrium below. A free-span ceremonial stairway arched gracefully between the first and second floors. Bothans were pushing and shoving in their efforts to get either up the stairs or down. Threading his way through the hurrying Bothans, Han headed toward the third-floor observation balcony facing the front of the building, where he'd be able to assess the situation. The crowd was huge, filling the entire street. Humans and aliens streamed toward the building. As he stepped out onto the balcony, a deep Bothan voice called from a balcony below.
Citizens of the New Republic, I respectfully appeal to you for calm.
The speaker was a distinguished-looking elderly male Bothan, wearing the elaborate sigil and signet of a clan leader. Han was no expert, but it sure didn't look like this was the sort of mob that a little Bothan sugar talk would do much for. Navit, the young radical agitator who had been contacted by Dizra and Tyrs, squinted experimentally through the macrobinocular sight running along the barrel. Almost time. And then just as he'd known they would, the Bothans sent a representative onto the lower balcony to talk to the mob. Navit was just beginning to line up his crosshairs when another figure appeared, this one on the upper balcony. A human? Frowning, Navit shifted his aim upward and tightened his focus. His eyes widened in disbelief. It was Han Solo, hero of the rebellion, New Republic shipping liaison, and all-around troublemaker. Navit had always felt he led a charmed life, but sometimes even he couldn't believe his own luck.
Navit?
The voice of Pensin, Navit's partner, came excitedly in his ear.
Up on the top balcony.
I see him, Navit replied coolly.
So, which one do we do?
Navit smiled tightly. Both, of course. Han had been gone only a few seconds when the door to the records room opened suddenly. It was Arukia, first secretary of the combined Bothan clans. He was breathing heavily.
Counselor Morgana Solo, we desperately need your assistance. There is a mob moving on this building.
The Bothan gestured toward the lightsaber hanging beneath her loose overjacket.
You must defend us.
Leia suppressed a sigh. There were still so many people out there who refused to see Jedi in any role except that of armed defender or combatant. Perhaps I could try talking to them. They had to buck the general flow of Bothans streaming upward as they descended the main stairway. At the bottom, they hurried toward the front doors. Leia lost sight of Arukia. Then she braked to a halt. Suddenly, something felt different out there. A hint of evil purpose flickering at the edges of the crowd's simmering anger. She stretched out with the force, trying to pin it down. And then, to her horror, an all-too-familiar sound split through the rumble. There was no warning. 1 minute, Han was looking out over the crowd, wondering if he should call Leia and suggest she come out here and talk to them. The next minute, a blaster bolt hit the wall by his left shoulder. He half-turned to look at it, got a glimpse of a mass of soft-looking gray clay with a small tube connected to a multifaceted crystal embedded in the middle, and suddenly it exploded in a brilliant flash of blaster fire. Han wrenched back as pain stabbed into his left shoulder. From somewhere below him came a scream, and as he dropped behind the minimal protection of the balcony's guardrail, he heard a second shot. Yanking his blaster from its holster, he tried to see where the attack was coming from. A few meters below, a Larisai lay still, and a Mishtak was writhing on the ground in agony. He half stood lifting his blaster, and someone shouted, pointing, "There he is!" He was pointing at Han. "There he is! There's the murderer!" In front of Leia, the door slammed open and a solid wall of beings poured into the atrium. Leia grabbed for her lightsaber as she threw a quick glance at the ceremonial stairway at the other end of the atrium. With some serious effort, she should be able to reach it ahead of the crowd. The lightsaber blazed. Holding it high, she tried to shout above the crowd, "Citizens of the New Republic! I'm New Republic Counselor and Jedi Knight Leia Organa Solo. I call on you to stop!" The people nearest Leia came to a reluctant halt, or rather tried to do so. The crowd behind them, unaware of Leia's presence, was still pushing forward. And at that moment, there was a shout from the Bothan guards at the foot of the stairway. And blaster bolts splashed into the crowd. From a dozen places in the crowd, blasters opened up. Six of the guards toppled to the floor. And then, through all the chaos that surrounded her, Leia caught a faint hint of something different. Han, terrified for her safety. A couple of meters above her head, she noted a thick tendril of Borski vine jutting out from the atrium wall. Pushing through the crowd, she maneuvered herself beneath it. Then, stretching out again to the force, she jumped. It was an easy jump for a Jedi. She made it with half a meter to spare. From her new vantage point, she was able to see Han now. Crouched beside the railing on the balcony, his blaster pointed down the stairway, his eyes searching anxiously through the mob for signs of his wife. Flanking him on either side, looking ready to dive off the balcony into the crowd if necessary, were Barkim and Sakisak, their Nogri bodyguards. Leia could see the crowd trying to storm up the stairway. If anyone opened fire, the result could be the slaughter of hundreds of people. One of the Nogri had spotted her now and pointed her out to the other. Han began to rise from his crouch, and his mouth moved with words she couldn't hear. "I'm all right," she thought desperately toward him, risking her grip to try to wave him back. He understood. "Here," she thought toward him, unhooking her lightsaber. Cocking her arm over her shoulder, she threw it across the atrium, guiding it through the force to drop into Han's hands. He ignited the weapon and began cutting the stairway free from the balcony. Someone in the crowd roared, and a pair of blaster bolts missed Han by centimeters as he ducked away. Something brushed the back of Leia's head. It was a length of synth rope dangling from a window directly above her, with Barkim's anxious face looking down at her from behind it. Grabbing the rope, she started to climb. She was nearly to the window when, behind her, the stairway crashed to the floor. Han winced as Leia carefully dabbed salve onto his shoulder. "No, I did not fire. Not into the crowd, not anywhere." Arukia insisted.
Those we spoke to claim you did. They said a blaster shot came from your balcony.
Well, I didn't fire. The Bothan's fur rippled.
If that is your word, I must accept it, although it does not really matter.
Han grimaced. No, probably it didn't. With 27 of the rioters dead and maybe 40 more injured, it hardly mattered anymore who had started it. Arukia turned to Leia.
Councillor Organa Solo, clan leader Railscar, has been in contact with the New Republic government. President Gavrisam would like to speak with you.
Leia left with Railscar. Then the door opened again, and the Nogri Barkimch came in.
I wish you to see this, Han Clan Solo.
Frowning, Han picked up the charred and twisted device from the Nogri's hand. What is it?
The remains of an Imperial delusion. A redirection crystal and blast tube filled with Tibana gas are mounted in a wad of adhesion material and placed near one who is to be accused of a murder. A sharpshooter then fires a shot into the crystal, which redirects the energy into the tube.
Han nodded grimly. Which then fires, just like a regular blaster. Suddenly the whole thing was coming clear. A random shot into the crowd and I get blamed for it. How come no one saw the sharpshooter's blast? Barkimk was contemptuous.
He was most likely using a Zero Nightstinger sniper weapon. It fires an invisible bolt. It is an inferior Imperial weapon, with this one advantage.
Han shook his head. Not exactly a weapon someone would just happen to be carrying around.
Two. Whatever it was that began this confrontation, there is no doubt it was Imperial agents who turned it into a riot.
The afternoon Silparian sunlight seemed especially harsh after the cool dimness of the Tap Café, where Lando had spent the afternoon. He'd gone there in hopes of hiring a guard to transport ore shipments and casino customers for him, but the contact he'd met had told him that with all the feuding going on in the galaxy lately, mercenaries were hiring out to whatever side paid the most. The price he named was far beyond anything Lando could afford. Feeling sorry for himself, he made his way back to his ship. The noise of the crowd reached him long before he came in sight of them, probably 300 humans and aliens milling noisily around the entrance to Docking Bay 66. The Lady Luck was two bays down in 68. Lando was a good 10 meters past the edge of the crowd when a stray fact managed to penetrate his blanket of grouchy self-pity. These protests invariably targeted Bothan merchants or diplomats or businesses, but there were no Bothans at Mos Tomro spaceport. They used a different facility entirely. He pulled out his comlink and punched for the spaceport control center.
This is Lando Calrissian in Bay 68. I'd like a listing of the ships in Bay 66.
There will be no need for that, a calm voice said from the alley behind him.
Lando spun around, his hand twitching aside the edge of his cloak with practiced ease and landing on the butt of his blaster. Standing a few meters away, decked out in full diplomatic regalia, were a pair of white-maned, leathery-faced Diamala. Lando addressed them cautiously.
Yes? Can I help you?
It was the taller of the two who spoke.
Yes, I believe you can. I am Porolo Miatamia, senator to the New Republic.
Miatamia's ear flicked in the direction of the crowd.
My ship is in Docking Bay 66. There are persons who disapprove of my government's stance on the Bothan issue.
Lando nodded.
Yes, I've heard. Your government wants to forgive and forget or some such thing.
The senator eyed him closely.
Would you then prefer to inflict mindless vengeance against innocents?
Lando spread his hands.
Hey, this is politics. I'm just a simple businessman trying to turn a little profit.
Miatamia eyed him a moment longer.
As that may be, I wish to ask you to use your position and influence with the New Republic to intercede on my behalf. The spaceport authorities refuse to remove the protesters from my ship that I may leave.
His influence with the New Republic. Right, Lando thought. I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do to help you.
And then a thought occurred to him.
At least, nothing I can do to get you to your ship. If all you need right now is to get to Coruscant or back home, that's another matter.
Miatamia didn't move. Speak of the cost, please.
So much for finding a subtle way to bring up the topic aboard the Lady Luck. There is no cost. However, my underwater mining operation is having problems with pirate attacks. I thought perhaps I might be able to make an arrangement with the Diamalan military to provide extra security for my shipments.
Tierce looked up from the display, and from his expression alone, Dizra knew he'd hit solid ore.
You have a target?
Dizra asked.
I do indeed, Senator Parolo Miatamia, Diamalan representative to the New Republic.
Tierce swiveled the display around to face Dizra.
He was having trouble getting his ship out of Silpar, and you'll never guess who he's hitched a ride with back to Coruscant.
Dizra scanned the report.
Lando Calrissian.
No wonder Tierce was looking so self-satisfied. The Diamala were even louder advocates of the forgive-and-forget attitude toward the Bothans than the Mon Calamari or the Duros. An ideal choice for the little drama Tierce had in mind. And to have a close friend of Han Solo's along for the ride made it even more perfect.
Well, General,
Admiral Pelion said, leaning back in his seat as he accepted a small glass of Carreus brandy from the other.
How are things at Yaga Minor?
About the same as always, Admiral.
High General Hestiv said,
but I presume you haven't come all this way to discuss the daily affairs of this planet.
Pelion took another sip of his drink.
True,
he said, watching the other closely. The Yaga shipyards were the last stop on Admiral Pelion's tour of the Empire's meager defensive facilities, in an effort to beg, argue, or cajole senior military personnel's acceptance of his peace initiative. Then he would start on his lonely journey to Pezzatin to await the arrival of General Belyblis.
To put it bluntly, said Admiral Pelion, the war against the New Republic is over, and we've lost. In my professional military opinion, it's time to talk peace.
Begging the Admiral's pardon, Hestiv guardedly responded, but I respectfully disagree. According to all reports, the members of the New Republic are poised to go for each other's throats, not ours, and with a little judicious pushing...
No, General,
Admiral Pelion interjected, the war is over.
And there's no disgrace in backing out of a no-win situation. I saw Grand Admiral Thrawn do it more than once, and without embarrassment, rather than waste his men and ships.
Very well, Admiral. You have my support. Is there anything else I can do for you?
Actually, General, there is,
Pelion said, pulling out a data card and handing it across the desk.
I'd like you to run this list through the Ubiquitrate base's computer system. I'm looking for unaltered information. These are people whom I suspect of having shady financial ties to Moff Dizra. I suspect him of treasonously manipulating Imperial funds and personnel, but I haven't yet been able to track the connections.
Admiral, you can rest assured that my records are completely secure. No one can access them without proper and double-confirmed authorization. That Major Tierce from the Obliterator found that out when he tried to...
Pelion interrupted.
Major Tierce isn't attached to the Obliterator. He's Moff Dizra's aide.
He gestured toward the terminal.
Is there any way to tell which records he tapped into?
Admiral, I just told you he didn't get in.
Oh, he got in, all right,
Pelion responded darkly.
And he wouldn't have been looking up something. The records at Bastion are duplicates of the ones here. Which implies his purpose was to add, delete, or alter information. Whatever it is, I doubt it has anything other than Dizra's personal aggrandizement at the core.
Its official name was the Grand Rim Promenade, and even on a world that prided itself on engineering achievements as much as Sajansij clearly did, it was a remarkable achievement indeed. 30 meters wide at its greatest expanse, attached to the eastern wall of the canyonade, it stretched the entire length of the canyon. The entire structure was held solidly in place without any repulsor lift support whatsoever, although emergency tractor beams were set up to catch anyone who fell. Beyond the elaborately tooled metal mesh guard wall, one could look down into the canyonade itself, to the city that had been built across the floor and sides. Here, too, there were demonstrations, with some people calling for retribution for the Bothans, others urging conciliation. It was the place Luke had seen in his vision. "Yes," Luke said to R2, who was rolling along at his side. "I feel it, too." They had reached the entrance to one of the sky arches and stepped onto the umbrella-roofed guard-walled bridge, the left side of which was equipped with a pair of slideways for the serious traveler who merely wished to go quickly from one side to the other. Then Luke felt a flicker in the Force. Somewhere, very near at hand, someone was preparing for murder. He turned, peering around the edge of the sky arch's roof, and there they were, two cloaked and hooded figures standing with their backs pressed against the guard wall, the smaller, child-sized figure clinging to the taller one. Beyond them, Luke could make out the shadowy forms of three assailants moving slowly in on them. In the hand of one, he caught the glint of a blade. There was no time to waste, and exactly one route that had any chance of getting Luke to them in time. It would take a hefty jump, but nothing a Jedi couldn't handle. The only imponderable was whether the canyonade's safety tractor beams would react too quickly, snatch him in midair, and whisk him helplessly away. Taking a deep breath, he drew on the Force and leaped. He reached the other level without so much as a nudge from the tractor beams and landed in a crouch on the non-moving section of the walkway. The two prospective victims still had their backs pressed against the guard wall. The hood on the taller of them had slipped back, revealing the lined face and white hair of an old woman. A child clung to her side in terror. Luke could see that the three assailants were merely the inner circle of a much larger group. 9 other men stood a few paces farther back, forming a semicircle around their intended prey. All 9 of them had blasters out and ready. And at that moment, 9 of those faces, and 5 of those blasters, were pointed at Luke. Luke straightened up. "That's far enough. Put down your weapons." One of the men laughed viciously.
"I've got a better idea. Why don't you turn around and walk away while you still can?"
Luke tried to sound more confident than he felt. "I don't think so." It was going to be a race to see whether he could get his lightsaber out fast enough to deflect the shots that would be coming his way the instant he made a move toward the weapon. One of the other men spat out,
"We're wasting time. Burn him and let's..."
And in that instant, the child moved. It was so smooth that at first Luke didn't realize what was happening. The child rotated out of his panic death grip on the old woman toward the knife-wielding assailant, one arm swinging across the man's chest. The arm movement deflected the child toward the second assailant, and he was now swinging toward the third man. With a gurgling gasp, the first man collapsed into a heap on the ground. The knife, now inexplicably in the child's hand, flashed and buried itself in the chest of one of the other assailants. The hood fell back far enough to expose the child's face. But it wasn't a child. It was a Nogri. That single glance was the last clear view any of them had of the alien. For some, it was the last clear view of anything they would ever have. Even as Luke grabbed for his lightsaber, the Nogri became a blur of motion, diving, rolling, slashing, with blades now in both hands, evading blaster shots with ease. A grenade clattered to the walkway at the old woman's feet and vanished as Luke reached out through the Force to hurl it up. By the time it exploded harmlessly far above them, the battle was over. The Nogri nodded gravely from the center of the carnage as he slid his 2 assassin's knives back into concealment.
"Master Skywalker, I am honored by your presence and grateful for your assistance."
Such as it was, Luke shook his head in astonishment. The old woman had crouched down beside one of the dead men and was going through his pockets with practiced fingers. She looked up at Luke.
If not for your quick action, we could all have been killed. Thank you.
You're welcome. Luke eyed her with growing doubts as she finished her search and moved on to the next body. A Nogri warrior and a woman with the expertise of a professional pickpocket were not exactly what he'd had in mind when he'd come leaping to the rescue. May I ask who you are? The woman paused in her search to flash him a smile.
My name is Miranda Savage. Plakmirak here is currently attached to me as my bodyguard. We work for an old acquaintance of yours, Talon Card. He's just arrived on Sejanzij.
Well, I'll be kesseled.
Card got to his feet as Luke, the Nogri, and Miranda Savage walked into the office aboard the Wild Card.
A pleasant surprise indeed. Hello, Skywalker.
Luke nodded in greeting. Card, I'm surprised to find you here. Miranda handed Card the data drop cylinder she had taken from one of the assailants. Card glanced at its markings.
Any trouble, Miranda?
She told him about the would-be assailants. Card turned the cylinder over in his hand.
Probably sent by one of the huts. They weren't exactly thrilled about losing this.
He handed the cylinder back to Miranda. After Miranda and the Nogri had left, Card cocked an eyebrow at Skywalker.
I believe I now owe you one. What brings you to Sejanzij?
Luke shrugged. The Force, actually. I was trying for a vision of the future. Mara was part of it. I've also saw myself here. What about you?
I've been looking into the possibility that outside agitators might be involved in some of the protests that have been cropping up around the New Republic. Since Sejanzij has a long history of peaceful demonstrations, I thought it would be an obvious target for subversion.
Luke asked, Have you made any progress on our clone hunt?
None. If there are clones out there, whoever is using them is keeping it very quiet.
The intercom on Card's desk twittered, and he leaned over to touch the switch.
Yes?
One of his officers reported,
Priority message coming through from the Starry Ice. Fawn says Mara's been captured.
Quickly, Luke circled the desk and stood beside Card as Fawn's image appeared.
Card, we were chasing that strange ship that Buzz Booster and his people. We reached the Neron system and observed an unidentified spacecraft land on the second planet. Jade took our defender and went in. We got a pulse transmission from her recorder that indicated she was in trouble. Captured. Maybe worse. The strange thing is, we can hear her say one name before the transmission cuts off. Skywalker.
The display went blank. Luke had been staring into the distance, absorbed in his thoughts. Now he turned to Card. I'm going after her. I have to. He headed for the office door. Card called after him.
You said you saw Mara in a vision. What was she doing?
Skywalker paused in the doorway. She was in a rocky place, floating in water. And she looked dead. Lando lay his Sabacc cards down on the table.
23, a pure Sabacc run.
Senator Miatamia's leathery Diamalan face was unreadable as he studied his own cards.
A pure Sabacc run, you say?
An uncomfortable sensation tickled at the back of Lando's neck.
The senator had made this same dramatic pause on the Sabacc pot hand in exactly 5 out of the 8 games they'd played since the Lady Luck's hurried scramble off Silpar. 5 games, which the senator had also happened to win.
And suddenly a loud crack of released energy burst from the direction of the Lady Luck's hyperdrive, and the mottled sky above them abruptly flowed into star lines. Lando was at the top of the staircase by the time the star lines finished shrinking back into stars.
What is it?
Miatamia demanded from behind him.
Hyperdrive failure.
But when he skidded to a halt in front of the engineering control panel, he frowned. There were none of the glowing red lights that would have indicated major systems failures, or even the blinking red status lines pointing to minor systems failure.
Lando leaped up the stairway and jabbed at the bridge door release. The door slid open and he stepped through. Oh, no.
There, floating in the darkness directly in front of him, was the all-too-familiar shape of an Imperial Star Destroyer. He dropped into the chair, threw full power to the drive, and twisted the yacht's nose hard to starboard. Or rather, tried to twist it. Even with full emergency power, the Lady Luck wasn't moving. Or rather, she wasn't moving where Lando wanted her to go.
"We are in a tractor beam," Senator Miatamia's cool voice said from behind him.